The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AAA Go Magazine and National Geographic Traveler. And before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. They are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And I think you'll enjoy where we're going to begin today's journey on Armchair Traveler. We're going to be taking a look at the New South Cuisine Hospitality and Table 301. Jason Fry's article is from the July-August 2018 issue of AAA Go Magazine. When AAA Premier Member Carl Sobachinski speaks, everyone listens. As founder and owner of Table 301, the 10-restaurant group that's a juggernaut in the Greenville, South Carolina culinary scene, he's earned this respect. But while others in his position may allow ego to reign, Sobachinski does not. With him, it's easy conversation, quick smiles, and warm, genuine greetings for old friends and new acquaintances. As he flits from group to group at a Southern Foodways Alliance dinner at Gianna, his contemporary Italian restaurant overlooking Falls Park in downtown Greenville, he leaves everyone in his wake buoyant. Even after 20 years of owning and operating restaurants, his energy and passion are infectious, making him a rare find in an industry with high burnout rates and high stress levels. A bigger table. Table 301's 10 restaurants push the boundaries of Southern food, updating regional classics and creating fresh takes on Southern dining. That said, not every restaurant Sobachinski touches is necessarily Southern. There's Gianna, the Italian restaurant, Passerelle, a French bistro, Mediterranean at the Lazy Goat, Nosedive at Gastropub, Pappy's Tacos, a taco and tortoise spot in collaboration with an employee, a food truck called Highway 301, and Southern Press Juicery, a cold-pressed juice bar. Oh, and Sobey's, New South Cuisine. With the exception of Sobey's, none of these restaurants are definitively Southern, but they all show the influence of Southern cuisine in their inspiration, ingredients, preparations, and fusions of flavor, much like Sobachinski himself. Sobachinski came to South Carolina in 1986 to study architecture and design at Clemson. He traded New England winters for Southern summers and learned his passions didn't lie solely in architecture, but spread over to the restaurant and hospitality industry. At Clemson, he worked in the kitchen of a country club. Not long after graduation, he and a partner opened their first restaurant, the 858 in Greenville. In 1997, he opened his flagship, Sobey's New South Cuisine, in a historic building in downtown, a project that combined his architectural and restaurateur skill sets. It paid off. They serve decidedly Southern dishes, but ones that are updated, more homages to the classics than carbon copies, and are made with fresh local ingredients. Fried green tomatoes, shrimp and grits, mountain trout, and a bevy of sides that reflect the local bounty give it the traditional feel, but dishes like hummus made from boiled peanuts, Nashville hot oysters, think Nashville's famous hot chicken, but in oyster form, and braised beef short ribs with polenta, think Italian grits, bring in a contemporary playful touch and make Sobey's a destination restaurant. It makes each of Table 301's restaurants destination eateries, actually, and their success has helped create an environment where more restaurants can flourish and put Greenville on the map for the thousands of visitors who allow their taste buds to guide their travels. Party of all. Culinary tourism has been a hot topic in both the travel and food world since the mid-2000s, but Sobachinski pushes past the simple idea behind culinary tourism. I'll travel to this city or that just for the food and into the larger idea of visitation as an economic driver. Part of my mission, our mission at Table 301, is to be ambassadors. All of us in the hospitality industry, we don't just sell food and beverage, we sell Greenville. We sell a place, he says. They also sell an experience, not just the experience of being in a particular restaurant or tasting a specific dish, but the experience of the town. That's why Sobachinsky reaches beyond his own restaurant group, works with other owners and chefs, builds relationships within the hospitality and entertainment community to do things that benefit Greenville as a whole. Along with friend and platinum-selling musician Edwin McCain, Sobachinsky created Euphoria Food, Wine, and Music, a four-day food and music extravaganza. Chefs come in from across the United States to cook, taste, and experience Greenville. And so do visitors who come for Euphoria but come back for a larger taste of Greenville. When we started Euphoria, it was an offshoot of the dozen or so charity concerts Edwin McCain was playing around town. At Table 301, we believe in giving back, so we wanted to help. Our idea was to put on one large charity event and distribute funding from one pool, but we had no idea what to expect, says Sobachinsky. In 2006, the first Euphoria, then a two-day event, ran over budget, but Table 301 and others kicked in to meet their charitable obligations. With a few lessons learned, they improved the event for the second year, learned a few more lessons, and made the third event even better. By 2010, Euphoria was a four-day festival featuring 40 chefs from 32 states, cooking in demonstration kitchens, preparing special dinners, participating in the grand tasting, and enjoying Greenville while doing it. Again, we want to be ambassadors for Greenville, so when a chef like Curtis Duffy comes to Euphoria, we don't pack his schedule with festival obligations. We give him plenty of time to sit in on other chef demos, see the town, try some of our restaurants. We try to give him an honest visitor experience, says Sobachinsky. It works as Duffy and others spread the word among their peers, diners, and fans. I start getting emails and texts in March asking me what September looked like and saying looking forward to being at Euphoria again this fall. When you have busy chefs saying they're excited to be back to work at your festival and spend their time in a town in the corner of South Carolina, you know you're doing something right. Southern hospitality, that's what Sobachinsky's doing right. At his restaurants, he serves it on plates and platters and in every interaction with service and bar staff, with host and hostesses. In doing so, he's introducing diners not only to the Southern and Southern-inspired dishes at his own restaurants, but to Greenville and all it offers. Well, since we've whetted your appetite, I'm sure, why don't we continue with culinary travel, immersive travel with curated foodie experiences from AAA Travel Partners. Now, this article is written by Christy Talley and appears in the July-August 2018 issue of AAA Go Magazine. For many travelers, the culinary aspect isn't just incorporated into the vacation experience. It's often a major component that drives travel decisions. That's certainly evident in a recent AAA travel survey that revealed 75% of Americans believe food and dining are an important part of their vacation experiences. 4 out of 5 people surveyed indicated they've incorporated food-related diversions like winery and distillery tours, dining with local families, and taking part in chef-led cooking classes into their trip. People are looking for an authentic travel experience that's found in the unique food and dining customs of the local culture, explained Sarah Henshaw, Vice President of Travel and Branch Operations for AAA Carolinas. It's not surprising that culinary travel is one of the fastest-growing travel trends today, she notes. From foodie-driven offerings on select sailings to local farm-to-table tours on land, many AAA travel partners provide varied culinary-centric diversions to please any palate. And we'll start with the umbrella of surf. Passengers sailing on Oceania Cruises Riviera and marina ships learn to prepare varied upscale dishes in the Culinary Center, the first hands-on cooking school at sea. Available at select ports, their culinary discovery tours take the experience to land as chefs lead passengers through the port's regional markets or local restaurants. Guests aboard select Holland America Line sailings can fuel their cooking show infatuation with the line's America's Test Kitchen feature cruises. Cooking classes with special guest experts are held in the Culinary Arts Center, a specially designed theater with auditorium-style seats and state-of-the-art plasma screens. Carnival Cruise Line's culinary offerings include onboard cooking demonstrations and taste tests conducted by their team of chefs, as well as through excursions at select ports of call. Among the excursions is the Taste of Mexico Tour, which features a walking tour and cooking lessons at a local restaurant. If you're on a Hawaii sailing, you can book the Hawaiian Culinary Home Tour, where you can visit the homes of island residents and sample locally sourced foods and baked goods. In March, Princess Cruises unveiled their new culinary shore excursion partnership with Bon Appetit magazine. These intimate tours immerse guests in local ingredients and cooking styles, creating a stronger connection between the traveler and the destination. Guests can choose from exclusive tours that explore Norway's culinary history or let you make scones in Ireland, as well as recommended tours that feature flavors of Denmark, Argentina, and Spain, among others. With their popular culinary cruises sailing, Celebrity Cruises has joined forces with Fine Cooking magazine and their popular PBS series, Movable Feast with Fine Cooking. Guests can participate in interactive cooking demonstrations and cooking classes. On Chef's Market Discoveries excursions, they can also shop for local ingredients for a chef-prepared private dinner. Now on to the turf area. Immersive and food-centric itineraries like the Iberian Wine Journey earned Inside Vacations the Travel Age West Wave Award for Best Travel Company for Foodies. The tour includes stops in the thriving wine regions of northern Spain and Portugal, where guests are guided by their own culinary expert and personal sommelier. Foodie walking tours through wineries and farm-to-table dining experiences are just a few of the highlights. Now, from iconic European treats like Swiss chocolate and Italian pizza to local wine and cheese in Tasmania, Trafalgar provides a nice geographic sampling of food tours. Opt for a shorter 4-day trip with Melbourne Food and Wine Discovery and Sydney's Food and Wine Discovery, or loosen your belt for the 11-day Taste of Southern Australia, which includes a visit to a Marin or crayfish farm and varied wineries. Epic food-centric cruises and culinary land tours are almost limitless. When planning a culinary vacation, it's important to seek the advice of a trusted travel advisor who can craft the trip that lines up with your vacation aspirations. And they note, of course, that their local AAA travel agent can help you navigate the menu and create an itinerary that's sure to satisfy your appetite for an adventure. So there you go. So there is something to this foodie experience, I take it, as people are planning some really fascinating trips. Well, in the August-September 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler, writer Eric Rosen pens the latest City Guide column, and it focuses on Shanghai. As we're going to learn, there's more than just good food waiting when you explore China's largest city. And as the opening subhead reads, "Why go now to Shanghai?" And they list three things: speakeasy, speed trains, and soup dumplings. Well, let's learn more with the introduction by Eric. With a futuristic skyline featuring some of the planet's tallest buildings, Shanghai is a city on the rise. Foodies will find flavors from every corner of the globe and an ever-expanding roster of restaurants serving regional cuisine. A recent hotel boom has seen the opening of flagship properties from brands such as Amin, Bulgari, and Capella. Shanghai is now a magnet for the contemporary art, with galleries showing works by international artists and, perhaps more interestingly, Chinese creatives making their marks. In 2019, a new outpost of Paris's Centre Pompidou will open in up-and-coming West Bund area. Yet Shanghai retains elements from its Art Deco heyday, when it earned the moniker Paris of the East thanks to the cosmopolitan communities of expats living in its glamorous foreign concessions. With nonstop flights from 11 American airports on 6 different airlines, it's easier than ever to explore this dynamic waterside city. And now, of course, we're going to move into specific categories like where to stay, what to see, what to eat, etc. I'm going to start with what to see in Shanghai, and there are four sides of the city, according to the editors. Old and new, kinetic and calm, Shanghai is a study in compelling contrast, and we start with classic sites. Get a glimpse of Shanghai from the early 1900s with a stroll past the grand buildings lining the Bund, the famed waterfront zone along the Hangpao River. A must-see, the running ceiling mosaics in the lobby of the former HSBC headquarters at number 12 in the Hankou district. Discover a fascinating chapter in the city's history at the Shanghai Jewish Refugees Museum and the former Ole Moshe Synagogue. Then head west to the French Concession to view glamorous villas like the one housing the Shanghai Arts and Crafts Museum. Now wows. Well, less than 30 years ago, Pudong was a warren of warehouses, factories, and fields. Since then, it's morphed into Asia's most distinctive skyline, with the world's second tallest building, the spiral silhouetted Shanghai Tower. Take in city views from its observation deck or from those in the Shanghai World Financial Center or Jingmao Tower. At the Longyang Road Station, visit the Maglev Museum to learn about the high-speed train, which can reach 267 miles an hour. A sample ride to the airport is a zippy 7 minutes. And then we have palette pleasers. Though the city lacks a Louvre or a Hermitage, its contemporary art scene has become one of the best in the world, seemingly overnight. Permanent and temporary exhibitions fill well-funded private spaces like the Shanghai Gallery of Art, Off the Bund, and the Long Museum in the emerging West Bund. Also in the Zhuhuexi district, art lovers can explore smaller museums and galleries along the former industrial waterfront. Find the trending Shang Art Gallery at the M50 Arts District and Creative Park, in addition to lesser-known upstarts. And then we have a green scene that you may enjoy. Shanghai's parks provide welcome retreats from the urban bustle, touristy but well worth a stroll. The Puxi District's Yuang Garden presents the pinnacle of classical Chinese garden design. Originally a Ming-era private oasis, Fuxing Park is the in the French concession, features exquisite roses and a monumental sculpture of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. The Xuan Sculpture Park makes an easy twofer with the Shanghai National History Museum, while the Lusan Park attracts locals who exercise, practice Tai Chi, and play music. Now, what about to eat if you're in Shanghai? Well, the takeaway is seek out secret speakeasy and devour hot soup dumplings. That's their tip, if you will. And what about those soup dumplings? Well, don't miss Zhengluang Bao, or soup dumplings, which have attracted a gaga-like fan base. There's something magical about delicate dough filled with steaming broth. Arrive early in the day to snag the specialty at local institution, Jia Jia Tangbao. Skip the long carryout queue at Nangsang Mantou Dian and go upstairs to its slightly pricier sit-down restaurant. For a more upscale experience, try the dumplings at Ding Tai Fung, each with 18 precise folds. Can you imagine going to eat and counting your folds? Anyway, then next we have what we call the hairy crab. Locals delight in this delicacy, named for the hairy substance on the claws. From late October through early December, when restaurants serve the crab sweet meat in golden roe. One of Shanghai's oldest eateries, Wang Bao He, is renowned for its crabs plucked from Yangsheng Lake. The fancy crab banquets at Yangcheng Jiajia are worth the high price, but more wallet-friendly options can be found at the seafood stands of Shoning Road. Now we have veggies for those of you who are vegans. Shanghai's vegetarian scene has blossomed under the radar, but thanks to an elegant dining room and gourmet-tasting menus, Fu Hui Hui is now routinely listed as a top spot. The divine Shanghai godly vegetarian diet dates to the 1920s and has drawn luminaries such as Chinese poet Lu Xun. And vegetarian lifestyle offers simple, trendy taste in upscale Huai Hui, while Hun Guang Tang serves seasonal dishes in a cozy spot on a narrow lane. And then, of course, there are those crazy speakeasies. Are you ready for this? Harking back to the era of Art Deco decadence, speakeasies are shaking up the city's cocktail culture. To access the four-story Speak Low, hopeful sippers must visit a bar supply shop, then open a hidden door. At Barulis, entry is through a classic British phone booth, but glasses are filled with Chinese spirits like Baijiu through Taylor Bar, has moved to a new location at the Le Son Chin Hotel. It still mixes on-the-spot creations for each customer. And speaking of staying in Shanghai, where to book it is next. And Shanghai has new classic and trendy selections, and we'll give you some examples here. Creating a wave of recent openings, the Middle House debuted this April in the Tony Taikuhui shopping development with 111 rooms and 102 residential suites. Interior designer Piero Lissone blended Italian and Chinese elements such as Murano glass and traditional birdcages. Diners can choose from Italian dishes at Fresca or Chinese banquets at Sui Tang Li. The Fairmont Peace Hotel has been a Shanghai landmark practically since the day it opened in 1929, thanks to the lavish parties thrown by its original owner, impresario Victor Sassoon. That revelry still echoes in the restored public spaces, including the palatial lobby and over-the-top orientalist decor of Dragon Phoenix Restaurant, not to mention the nightly shows by the hotel's famously swinging jazz band. Some of the most Instagram-worthy panoramas of Pudong skyscrapers can be found from the pool deck and outdoor bar at the Shanghai The Bund in the emerging Hongkou district. The 374 colorful guest rooms and suites offer city views plus clever design touches like bed pillows resembling Zhao Long Bao and chopsticks. The Away Spa makes a tranquil redoubt after a day in the city, while the Wu Bar sets a swanky nightclub scene with creative cocktails featuring ingredients like vodka infused with roasted garlic. Wow. Those fellas know how to party over there, don't they? My goodness. Anyway, well, another column that's featured in the August 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler is called Places We Love. In his essay, Recipe for Recovery, writer Jose Andres discusses his beloved Puerto Rico and how the island nation is recovering from a hurricane that wreaked havoc nearly a year ago. As you will hear, it is an effort using food as a means for people to help people recover and rebuild. When Hurricane Maria struck Puerto Rico in September 2017, I knew it was going to be serious, and I had to do something. I had already seen what Hurricane Harvey did in Houston a month earlier, and I knew of the damage that Hurricane Irma had left in her wake. After a disaster, the urgency is all about now. It's when people need to be fed, and cooks have a special skill when it comes to this kind of situation. We're used to acting quickly, and our job is to feed the many. So I called a few of my chef friends. But this is not about me. This is a story of the people of Puerto Rico feeding the people of Puerto Rico. The hashtag Chefs for Puerto Rico team that came together to feed the island, the volunteers who supported the movement, the many, many people who did everything they could to help their neighbors and their communities. There were so many amazing people. There were the two little girls in the town of Luisa and Rosella, Angela, and Yoleta, who helped us out by serving meals, and they insisted that they would not eat until every single person in the community had a plate of food. There was the pastor, Eliomar Santana, who drove across the island from Nagobo to offer his church as a kitchen to feed his community and those around him. We went and visited Eliomar's church, and the congregation stood in a circle and prayed. These are just some of the moments I will never forget. Now, nearly a year later, Puerto Rico can be a perfect travel destination. To support the island and its recovery process is as easy as showing up. There are so many small businesses, delicious restaurants and food trucks, and local shops that will be so happy to have visitors as they are continuing to get back to work. As an island in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico has cuisine that benefits from its geography. This is American soil and American waters, but there is also the influence from my home country of Spain. The base of many recipes is a version of the tomato onion sofrito that I grew up with, but made with local ingredients from culantro and ajo dulce. There is a huge influence from the native Taino population and the African slaves who were brought to work in the sugar industry and mines. This difficult and sad colonial history led to a rich cultural blend, an island of diverse cuisine. And you cannot forget rum. Rum has been made in Puerto Rico for centuries, and today 70% of the rum we drink in the United States comes from the island. I ate some of the most amazing chicken in my life at a little spot called Maello's Chicken Fever in Morovis, about 30 miles from San Juan. It's worth the drive to get there. Maybe it even deserves a Michelin star for its chicken. If you've never had land crabs or arjoyas, you need to get them in Peñones, outside of San Juan, where you can taste the very best arroz con huevos. And there is this dish called espao de langosta, a soupy lobster stew that is just incredible. There are several rather excellent oysters in Bocaran that grow on mangroves in the bay. Then, of course, there are the famous pork dishes of the island. One of my favorites is lechon, roast suckling pig, which they have in Gavate, and I would travel halfway around the world for these pigs. La Placita, the historic Market Plaza in Santurce, a popular district or barrio in San Juan, is packed every weekend with dancers. I love the distinctive pink restaurant run by Jose Enrique, a friend and driving force behind the hashtag Chefs for Puerto Rico team. His kitchen creates some of the best food in America and was the beating heart of our relief effort cooking operations. While you're in San Juan, you must get a rum sour at Jose Santella's place and make reservations at Mario Pagan's restaurant. And don't miss the food trucks. Look for Peco Peco, Yummy Dumplings, and the Meatball Company around the city and at the Miramar Food Truck Park. Puerto Rico has always been a beautiful halfway point between my Spanish heritage and my American identity. It is a place where I feel happy, a place where community is so deep and people are so welcoming. After I spent time there over the last year, my love for the place has become even stronger. I have seen some of the most selfless, generous people of my life. Puerto Rico is American at its best, humanity at its best. Well, by the way, the writer and chef, Jose Andres, lives in Washington, D.C., where he not only makes a living as a chef, but also, obviously, as a humanitarian. And he's written a new book, We Fed an Island, The True Story of Rebuilding Puerto Rico, One Meal at a Time. And this book is due to come out in September. In our remaining minutes, we're going to take a look at Bogota, the focus of the Travel Hacks column in the August-September 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler. And here are some of the things we can learn. As the editors note, Colombia's crime rate has hit a four-decade low. The government made peace with FARC rebels, and tourism has doubled in the last 10 years. The country is finally becoming the major destination it deserves to be. Here's how to make the most of a trip to the capital city. And there's a fair game, as they call this. American, Delta, JetBlue, and United fly nonstop to Bogota from U.S. hubs for as low as $300 round trip. You can redeem United miles for award tickets on Colombian airline Avianca. Hotel with history. Many global chains are here, but the city's most distinctive property may be the Four Seasons Hotel Casa Medina Bogota, set in a 1946 edifice that is registered as a historic landmark. And then there's higher ground. Though Bogota's motto, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, is poetic, the altitude can be a challenge for some visitors. Skip rigorous activities the first days and stay well hydrated. There's the view from the top. Towering above the city, the mountain of Montserrat offers an invigorating hike. If you don't feel like making the climb, get whisked to the summit via funicular or cable car. Keeping it real. For authentic souvenirs, browse student works at the Santo Domingo School of Arts and Crafts or fair trade wares from indigenous communities at Artesanías de Colombia. And then we have caffeine buzz for those of you who are Java lovers. Colombia is famous for its coffee, but not yet its cafe culture. Arte de Pasión Café is changing that with beans sourced from around the country and a training program for baristas. Well, tempting tables. Foodie capitals Lima and Mexico City claim the glory, but Bogota also has chef-driven restaurants. Harry Sasson and Leo regularly rank on list of South America's best restaurants. So there you go, some tempting things to enjoy if headed for Bogota. And that means we've run out of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. And we certainly hope you'll be listening next time, that you've enjoyed your journey. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and reminding you the content portion of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.